Good morning, everybody. So glad you could join us today. Today is Sunday, November 18th, 2018. This is the roundtable discussion being recorded at the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And this morning we will start with our morning prayer.
Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And Mary Baker Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, there are a couple things I wanted to mention before we get into the lesson. First, I wanted to thank you all. A lot of bulletin board comments and also forum remarks. Very grateful for all of them. If I don't read or get to all of them, nothing personal. It's just a matter of time. It could go for hours. So anyway, but I'm very grateful to all of you for being active. And then also, some of you I shared this with, those of you I spoke with, but there was something on the Christian Broadcasting Network. As you all know, there have been those fires in California, and something I know we're all praying about. And there was a report, she was a evidently movie actress, her name is Brenda Epperson, if anyone wants to look her up. But anyway, she had a ranch out in the line of where the fires are and were, and she prayed, I guess she's a Christian, she prayed over her farm, her ranch, her horses. She prayed the 91st Psalm, and the fires all stopped all around her home. Nothing was touched, and she was able to save a lot of other people's horses.
35 horses.
35 horses, thank you. It was a beautiful story of the power of God working, and she believes, and I've also heard that there's revivals going on, Christian revivals going on out in California. Man's extremity is God's opportunity. So don't be discouraged that you think our work in vain in any way. It is not. It is working. And it's reaching those who are reaching out to God. And I've decided on our carousel we'll have one icon, and it will be something like Noteworthy News. And I sent that YouTube to Jeremy so he can put it up. And those of you who find things similar to this, the power of God working in our nation, in our world, many of you have sent me things through the years, actually, we'll put them up. Someone said we should start the monitor again, but I don't think we have enough to do that. But we can certainly do this. We can certainly do this and advertise these things. Now, this, we know in our church, we have Elizabeth. She had, at least three properties in the South that were going to be devastated by the hurricanes coming, three different hurricanes. And none of them touched her properties. Is she here? Yes. Right?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. She's given testimonies about this. We have Luann, who what there was a scorching drought up in the North Country, she calls Northern New York, and all her area where she lived was like a garden, right, Luann?
Yes, all the other properties around mine were burnt right off to the dirt. It was just sand blowing. But my yard was all green and my flowers were blooming. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Stunning difference.
She felt almost embarrassed because about it. And of course, we are never happy that anyone else is suffering, but let it be an example of the power of God when called upon. And Bruce told his story. I mean, we have many stories here at church. You've heard them, where there are big snowstorms and all the power is out, and we make our tiny little way in the snow and have our church service. Our roof was recently put on, what, 2 weeks?
Two and a half weeks, where it did not rain on any of the days when they were working. It only rained on the weekends when they weren't working. And now it's finished just in time for our first snowstorm.
Yeah, which we had, which is quite beautiful. So it works, and we are working it, and we will continue to. And in doing it in our little vineyard, it blesses all mankind. And we can point, we always point, we're like the shepherds pointing to God. This is where the answer is. This is where you turn. It'll work for you. It's worked for me. It will work for you. So please, all of you, if you find some interesting stories of the power of God, power of God's love working. I know some of you sent me things about things that have happened in prison, for instance, or with weather, or all kinds of things. God's power working. We'll put it on our little
noteworthiness.
Okay. All right. So next, we will go to the watch appointment.
Watch number 449. Watch that you bear in mind that God is not separate from the blessings he bestows, in the sense that his expression carries his qualities. On this basis, we declare that God never sends man gifts. He always brings them. We cannot believe that any part of his expression lacks any of his qualities. Food as spiritual nutriment, designed to support man, cannot be separated from God's love and care. Hence, it cannot produce suffering or death. Neither does it sustain man of itself. It must be considered to be the expression of God's love.
Such a beautiful thought. And this is what it is to pray without ceasing. Everything you do, you bring it back to God, including your eating, your food, everything. You know, it's a mortal belief that says certain foods are going to harm you. I mean, even who says certain foods are going to make you get big? I don't know. It's all human belief. If we believe it and get into it and worship it, we can seem to come under it. So keep your focus on God and pray continually. Mrs. Eddy said, I was looking for it, I couldn't find it, but she said somewhere that she was raised always saying grace before she had her dinner. She could not do otherwise. It's a good thing to pause and remember who is giving you the food and that it's not sourced from him and it can only bless you and bless everyone. There's enough for everyone everywhere. Say these simple prayers. Keep our connection with God.
Thank him for bringing the food. I'm sending it. I love that.
Yes, thank
love
you.
Love that thought.
Bringing it. He's with
it. If it's good, then it's love, really.
Exactly.
Yes. It can only bless. It can only be a blessing. Any other comments about that?
Oh, I just wanted to mention something that this is about the fires. Sorry, backtrack. Ray sent me something that was so beautiful. She had sent her son a Bible, and everything else burned, but the Bible, the leaves of the Bible were blowing in the wind. And the thought came to me, well, that this is the answer. The answer is blowing in the wind. That wasn't
Thank you. Somewhere in Prose Works, there's a story, too, of something burning, but the signs of health not being touched, everything burning all around it, but the signs of health. And this morning, I saw a picture of out west, someone's home completely burned, but there was the flag, untouched. And it was a veteran's home. So, I mean, there's no human explanations for this. Only divine. Only God's protection. God can do it in these instances. He can do it in every instance. But we have to be willing to acknowledge him and turn to him. We can't be oblivious to him. So let it bring on a revival. Let it bring on people finding the Father and worshiping him. A wonderful thing. Okay, the subject today, mortals and immortals. Golden text proverbs. The righteous are bold as a lion. Elizabeth wrote this lesson. It's a very good one. Well thought out. Again, I'm very grateful for all this activity, because it shows you are demonstrating, which means you are demonstrating your oneness with God anytime you do anything like this. Okay. And we're all learning to be bold as a lion. And this time together, we'll be talking about developing our moral courage. So we will start with the responsive reading. I looked up the first two verses in my Amplified version, which I like to turn to sometimes. And it's Psalm 1, and it says, blessed, happy, is the man who walks and lives, not in the counsel of the ungodly, following their advice, their plans, and purposes, nor stands, submissive and inactive, in the pathway where sinners walk, nor sits down to relax and rest where the scornful and the mockers gather. But his delight and desire are in the law of the Lord, and on his law, the precepts, the instructions, the teachings of God, he habitually meditates, ponders, and studies by day and by night. So, if someone were to peer into your window, which picture would he see? Would you be just kind of lounging around and listening to that voice, insipid voice, talking to you, telling you're no good, you're not feeling well, the food you ate upset you? Have you slowed down into that picture? Or would we see someone that was pouring over and meditating on God, his instructions, by day and by night? It's a very good question to ask yourself. And catch yourself if you find that you're slowing down. What's the problem with slowing down?
It comes to a stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not alert.
And the devil catches up with you.
Oh, my
gosh.
Well, it's important to remember when you're doing God's work, you know, especially when you're doing God's work, or even if you're not, the devil's going to nip at your heel. It's not going to leave you alone until you totally totally demonstrate its unreality. But while we're working, while we're here on this earth, on this planet, it's going to try to sneak around and catch you. If you keep working, if you keep active in God's work, it'll always be too late. You will be one step ahead of it. But if you slow down, try to relax, take a little ease, well, it's going to be right there.
Isn't there something said that error can't hit a moving target?
That's it. It can't. Can't hit a moving target. That doesn't mean you rush around madly, but it means you just keep a steady gait going, you know? I mean, I know myself. You can start getting a little thought, and instead of just pushing it right out, if you start listening to it. That's what this Bible passage is saying. You follow its advice, your plans, its purposes. You're submissive, inactive. You're relaxing and resting. You begin to listen to that voice instead of just shutting it out immediately and getting on with what you know to be true. Gary said, you stay ahead of it. You keep moving. That
if you go back to Eve and the serpent. No. The serpent was talking. Well, the serpent's going to talk to everybody, anybody who will listen. So don't be dismayed when the serpent starts giving you messages that aren't right, that aren't good, that aren't in your best interest. Her mistake was not the fact that the serpent was there. Her mistake was that she stopped and talked to it, listened to it. So it's going to come to you. Don't make the mistake of stopping to listen to it.
Yeah,
or talk to it.
The valley of, oh no.
Oh, yeah.
Nehemiah, yes. They wanted him to come and talk to him. I said, I'm too busy. I'm working on the wall. Well, that should be our attitude. We're too busy. We've got things to do. We don't have time for this nonsense. It was a trap.
I was just thinking about Martha Wilcox talks about how God is sending us way more than we use right now. So obviously, slowing down is not the answer as far as that goes. I think a lot of times when you go to learn something new, at first it seems like really overwhelming, and then after a time you're like, I don't know why I had an issue with this. So I think that's the way all this should be. You should feel a little more confident every day.
Yeah, and remember, the Father is always with you. He's talking to you, so why not listen to that voice? I thought it was so sweet, that testimony of Barbara, you know, where she was at the door looking all around for her husband and just quietly said, I'm right here. Many people have said how that has helped them. God is right here.
It's beautiful.
Very beautiful, yes. A simple thought like that. Along with that, I was taken in Science and Health, Jeremy Reed, number 4.
Mortals have a modus of their own, undirected and unsustained by God.
So what is a modus? Modus operandi.
Like your operating instructions.
Thank you. Thank you. Lawrence, were you going to speak?
I'll say the way you do something, the way you do things, your mode of operation.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah.
It's someone's habits of working. So think of it. Do you have your own modus operandi? Do you have habits of working that are undirected and unsustained by God? Remember, you don't have to. So So don't bounce out of bed in the morning and just get into this habit, this routine of running around doing things.
Running around smartly and accomplishing nothing.
Yeah. God is directing you if you listen and sustaining you. Aren't those two huge things?
Very huge.
Those are, yes, very huge. They're very huge. But don't leave home without it. Take it in. I was so struck with that. I said, my goodness, your God is directing me and sustaining me. Am I listening, or am I just going around the way I've done all my life without thought to it? So, what a wonderful thing we have with this God directing and sustaining us. You know, directing and sustaining, that covers about everything, doesn't it?
Yes.
It seems the opposite of that would be confused and empty, which is definitely how I felt before.
Confused and empty, yeah.
Also, I think it's a beautiful contrast to this righteous man described in the first two verses you read. This man walked in the counsel of God, and this other one is you're doing things as you think you should do it.
Exactly, yes.
That's why the righteous man is bold and the other is afraid all the time.
That's right. Right. And that separates the men from the boys or the mortals from the immortals.
And like it says in the responsive reading, the Lord knows the way of the righteous. He's directing them. They're following him. The way of the ungodly has to perish. It has to. There's no other possibility for it. It doesn't mean the ungodly will perish. It just means that that way, that modus of operation, has to perish. And what a wonderful prophecy. What a wonderful thought to know that the wrong way of doing things is always going to perish. It perishes when you find the right way.
Thank you.
What great hope.
Now Linda wrote about, we'll maybe start with that. Number 12, there's too much animal courage in society and not sufficient moral courage. Okay, so what is that difference between animal courage and moral courage? I don't know if you want to speak to
it. Well, for me, I realized moral courage is motivated by God, has God in it, and animal courage has no God in it. How I simplified it for myself.
Okay, well,
and I realized that a lot of my do-goody was animal courage, actually, rather than moral. And it goes back here. It was undirected and unsustained by God. There was no God in it. And I realized what was behind it was this first degree. I had evil beliefs, passions, appetites, fear, depraved will, self-justice, pride, envy, deceit, all that was in my thought when I did good. So it wasn't good. It was good in the guise, evil in the guise of good. So this lesson really sunk into me because it's so tricky when we say good isn't good, but it's versus human good versus the good of God. It's the motive behind it. This whole lesson was about your motive, and I realized it all had to do with motive, and if it's not God, it's not sustained. So I realized why it didn't work either.
Thank you. Anyone else? I mean, in the Bible, we've seen examples of Peter. He had the animal courage, right? He'd jump up and profess things, and yet not without the spiritual sense, spiritual discernment that's needed.
Oh, the subtle willfulness, too. You're willful. I'm going to do this. You know, in your thinking, you know you're thinking, I'm just going to do what I want. And yet, is that the way? No.
No, and thank you, Florence. That really is the explanation of the difference. Animal courage is human will. Plowing ahead with without regard to what God is instructing, without regard to God's will. Moral courage is the strength that comes when you submit entirely to God's will and you know absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're doing the right thing and that you are protected in doing that right thing by God, and that there is no power that can harm you or prevent you from fulfilling what God has for you to do.
Beautiful explanation of the difference. Thank you. So what about the story of the midwives? Elizabeth, you want to tell us what about it?
Well, that's a good example of moral courage. The midwives were in a difficult situation. The Pharaoh had told them they needed to kill all baby boys, and they knew that was wrong. And I think one of the key citations is, but the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And when I looked up fear in 1828 dictionary, I really love this definition because it says, in good men, the fear of God is a holy awe or reverence of God and his laws, which springs from a just view and real love of the divine character, leading the subjects of it to hate and shun everything that can offend such a holy being, and inclining them to aim at perfect obedience. So that's how they were motivated. And when Pharaoh called them to appear before him and asked him why they were letting the boys live, they said, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come in unto them. Basically saying that the Hebrew women delivered the baby so fast that they didn't need the help of a midwife. By the time the midwife comes, the baby's born, washed, and with the mother. What could they do? We don't know if that's true or they were just deliberately not, or saying that their tardiness was deliberately planned, but they chose to obey God and not to obey Pharaoh, and thus God blessed them.
Thank you, and it's a wonderful example of this moral courage, and that was a beautiful definition in the 1828 dictionary of what it is. It's this tremendous love for God. You can't sit still. You just are impelled, but it is your motive and your love for God. And then Mike and Barbara on the forum wrote about motive, and it's in the lesson too, right? Motives give pinions to thought and strength and freedom to speech and action, while a wrong motive involves defeat. So that is the whole key to the moral courage. Why are you doing what you're doing? Usually, if the animal courage means you are doing it for whom?
Yourself.
Yes.
Who you think yourself is, anyway.
Yes, it's something to yourself. You prove to others how tough you are or something. While if it's moral courage, you are doing it for God. And you don't care if you never get any credit, if no one ever hears about you, whatever, for God. And how many times has it been done like that? And how many times have we never known who it was who did the brave thing? Many times. Yes. And that's all that matters. God knows. And God rewards the righteous. The right time, the right way.
I think there's also a nuance there, too, because Mrs. Eddy's history was before her quote-unquote discovery of Christian Science. As a child, she stood up to that bully that was picking up picking on all the little school children, and she was just a little school child, Mrs. Eddy, that is, at that time. And she just defeated and actually healed that girl, because then she didn't pick on the little ones afterwards. And also, when she was involved with writing against slavery, her husband told her that he couldn't protect her if she was found out. She was writing under a pseudonym, living in South Carolina, anti-slavery stuff. But the interesting thing is that I think this is where the where God behind you or not are doing it. And it doesn't even have to be in a selfish motive, because when I was doing farm activist stuff, I mean, there were many times when I would do be in a situation where I would be completely fearful, and it wasn't being brave at all. It wasn't just for me, it was for other people. But, you know, now I understand finally through the teachings here how to better discern if you have God behind you or if you're doing it not necessarily selfish motives, but still on a material basis. It's still not going to work out.
Yeah, in other words, the way you think it should be done instead of more listening to God's direction.
Thank you. That's very well put.
Thank you, yes.
And one other, just one other aspect, it's been touched on, these Hebrew midwives. You know, they made a conscious decision not to do what the Pharaoh told them to do. They must have known that they were going to invite a very uncomfortable situation as a result of not doing. Maybe their lives were probably in danger for not obeying the Pharaoh. But they didn't, you know, they didn't shy away from a potentially very uncomfortable situation. Their obedience to God. That is why it is moral courage. They have the courage to face any uncomfortable human situation. Obey God.
I think it involves that love that triumphs over, you know, you don't even see the danger. It's like a mother defending their baby or something. You go anyway. You don't think about what's going to happen.
Right.
The love overcomes you. And you just do it.
And you're willing.
Yeah.
You're willing to face
right.
whatever comes at you.
And how could a midwife actually be able to kill a child that they delivered?
Well, let's not go into that, all right?
I guess if you're so afraid for your own self because of Pharaoh's orders, you might find a way. But
I'm sure there'd be a way, but we don't need to talk about it.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
So, that's it. So, what Lawrence said is absolutely true. When you don't even think about yourself because you're motivated by love, and this is what real love is: love of God and man, and not love of self. And that is the love that does wonders upon wonders. The love that liberates. That's the love. Those who just sit and think about themselves and are paralyzed, that's not love. That's the human stuff we were talking about earlier. So, how do you get it? This moral courage, this divine love? Well, we're talking about it. So if you don't have it, you can all, I'm sure, have more of it. But it's certainly pouring over God's precepts and loving Him and being grateful for all the good and acknowledging all the good He's done. So He's an ever-present reality in our lives. Now, I thought Jeremy sort of went along with this, too, about doing heartily unto the Lord. And read what you wrote from Spiritual Footsteps.
Mrs. Eddy wanted the work to be done scientifically. And one salient point in all work is the knowledge that in science there is no middle ground. One's mental work either tears up or builds, or tears down or builds up, or it makes nothing of it, and so tears it down. There is no point at which the thinking of the student is void. If it is human, it is expressed in human results. If it is divine, it is made manifest in good results.
The next paragraph.
So this is me. In looking for hallmarks of those human results, the Merriam-Webster website had these antonyms of heartily: weakly, cheerlessly, darkly, heavily, miserably, morosely, unhappily. These qualities exemplified my old life, and I'm so grateful to God they're behind me.
That's great. Thank you. Now think of it. That's why your thoughts matter so much. Don't think it doesn't matter what you think. Don't think, well, you just live alone and it doesn't matter. You think whatever thoughts you want to. You're either contributing to the beautiful, the good, and the pure in life, or you are doing this other stuff. Pulling down, tearing down. Some of this got me to stop some of this foolish thinking I was doing, because I realized, you know, I'm not just affecting myself. I'm polluting the whole atmosphere. You're either polluting it or purifying it. So which one do you want to be? And that's true. You know, Una Willard, who was a old-time practitioner from Oregon, she speaks a lot about this, that every time you come into a group, you enter any kind of a situation, you bring your thought. It's either a beautiful thought that smells lovely and upholds and uplifts, or it's all right, yin, 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 yin. So which one do you want to be? And you know darn well, because you can see by just feeling the presence of someone, looking at someone, you feel their presence. What are they doing? Are they upholding, uplifting, loving? Or are they, oh, look at her, she's looking this way, or look at that person, and I don't think I wish I looked like her. I'm in this. Garbage that goes on.
I think that the whole difference is that love, that mother love, because just thinking about what's being said here and my situation, as I had testified that I had taught myself not to love during that period where I was doing that stuff, it wasn't out of love, it was like it was some kind of an obligation. But I think that love is the key, that if you're doing it with God's love, and you don't have to fear, because you know you're doing the right thing. Otherwise, you're constantly questioning and not sure what the outcome is going to be.
And all of that gets to be such human intellectuality. You know, you just see, you feel, you are, you love. If you're always thinking this or thinking that or going into this or that, there's no end to it. There's no end to it. Love. Love is an intellectual.
And it's okay to have an obligation. We actually all do have an obligation. We have an obligation to our Maker, and we have an obligation to mankind. We even have an obligation to ourselves, and what is that obligation?
To obey God.
Yeah, Mary just talked about it. Watch our thinking.
I was just going to say that that's the big difference, is to have that correct obligation, and then it's going to turn out right, other than being a waste of time.
Exactly, exactly. And when you feel that obligation to God and to mankind, that puts you in a frame of thought where you are receptive to being guided by God. And God knows what's best for all of us, and God will guide you into doing what's best for those around you. And that's what moral courage, that's where moral courage comes into play. It means doing the right thing, regardless of any potential danger it might existence. But when you realize that your life is spiritual, that it is that you are God expressing Himself, then you have no fear for your own mortal being. Paul referred to it as dung after he learned what Christ was all about. It's a total freedom.
One other point in science and health I wanted to get to before we get to what Lawrence and Parsons wrote about, but citation 8. The facts of divine science should be admitted, although the evidence as to these facts is not supported by evil, by matter, or by material sense. Because the evidence that God and man coexist is fully sustained by spiritual sense. So this is the rub, my friends. You have to admit it, okay? You have to take that leap of faith, even though everything else says no, 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 no. It's not happening. You've got to say, well, yes, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to trust my spiritual sense. They have to be admitted. And in admitting it, that's your first step. That's the obedience. Remember last week we talked about obey before you understand. Well, you obey this before you might understand it. Everything's screaming to you, no, no, no. Well, God is saying yes, yes, yes. How the Moses and the children of Israel walked out on the Red Sea. Don't do that. You better be crazy. But they did. And so we must be willing to admit it and take that first step, even though everybody's telling you not to. You're an idiot. Got to do it. Come on, let's go. And once you do, things will open up and you'll begin to see more and more and more. It'll open up to you, the truth. Your spiritual sense is working now and your material sense will be silent. Okay, the beautiful forum, Lawrence and also Parsons, on Deuteronomy 31. Lawrence?
Yes, I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful verse, so comforting. I've used it many, many times because, as I said, when I used to be so fearful because I was allowing things unlike God, good, to mesmerize and dominate me, at that time I was denying God's omnipotence and omnipresence. And really, this is one of the verses that was so just... not to be afraid of them. And to the last part that touches my heart so much, he said, he will not fail thee nor forsake thee. So what else do I want? This always meant so much to me.
Thank you. And you see, this is it. This is the pouring over the truth. On his law doth he meditate day and night. I mean, I write these things down on little pieces of paper. I take them with me. I think about them during the day when you are feeling afraid of something. And then, as I just said earlier, admit to it. Admit, okay, well, you can't see God, and maybe you think everything's roaring and raging all around you. Well, trust it. Be strong. Be of good courage. I am here. I am with you. I won't fail you. I won't forsake you. And as you really get this into your being, you will find it happening. Your outward circumstances will change. It's why the fire didn't burn that woman's branch down. It's why the floods didn't destroy Elizabeth's rental home. It's why the drought didn't touch Luann's house. Despite material senses, they were there. They understood this principle. They accepted it. They admitted it. And it happened. You can do it too if you haven't already, but most of you have, and many of you have given many wonderful testimonies testifying to this. This is why we keep doing this. over and over, having these times together, having our testimony meetings. And this holy week that's coming up, Thanksgiving, counting your blessings. We certainly hope you will be with us Thursday morning. Your whole day will go so much better if you spend 1 hour in prayer, praising and thanking God for His goodness. You know, I heard something recently, I hadn't thought about it. It was the Bible story about Hezekiah, how when he was asking for more years to his life, and he was talking to God and saying, I've been so good, I've worked so hard, give me some more. But things didn't really change until he started praising God and thanking God. Praise, gratitude, it has a mighty effect. And this is one of the holiest weeks, and as we've talked about, it's the only holy day that Mrs. Eddy provided what?
Service for.
Yes. And we, years ago, we used to kid because Wednesday night, no one would ever come to church on Wednesday night because everyone was taking their turkeys and pies. And then Thursday wasn't much better. And if people did get up, they might say, oh, I'm so grateful, I have a huge family, they're all coming over, boy, are we going to have fun. And everyone else would feel terrible because maybe they weren't. Maybe they were by themselves. Who knows? But that's okay. Being by yourself, a good thing, because you can pray. Betty said, how did she love to observe Christmas?
Quietude.
Yes. So however you find yourself, the time to pray and be grateful and happy, and certainly join your church family, because that's what we are. Spend your hour with all of us. Okay, so I think today I'm going to do something else, but I'll have Gary end with what Parthens wrote on the forum.
And this is entitled Love Individualized versus Animal Magnetism Collectivized. Starts with a quote, "Watch lest you accept the common notion that the small power represented by David's little stone overthrew a great power called Goliath. David, as the visible representative and manifestation of the omnipotence of divine mind, was the invincible giant, equipped with infinite power that overthrew Goliath, whose power lay wholly in deception through signs. The trick of the mesmerism of sense testimony is to reverse everything, magnifying the nothingness of error so that it seems like a giant, and belittling the power and presence of spirit," end quote. Carpenter, Watching Point 153. The name Goliath means passage, revolution, heap. As he stepped on the battlefield every morning and evening, Goliath presented himself as a mountainous heap of intimidation. Like an animal in Darwinian struggle for dominance, Goliath was totally dependent upon how he appeared to sense, not soul. Morning and evening, day after day, Israel listened to Goliath proclaiming himself as the way, the truth, and the life of Israel, as the supreme leader of a revolution, not only against King Saul and his army, not only against the nation of Israel, but against the God of Israel himself. Thus did Goliath pound his drum, insisting that surrendering to him was the only safe passage out of the conflict between Philistia and Israel. And Israel listened very closely to every drumbeat. The picture of Israel's king and army demoralized by fear demonstrates how an entire nation can fall under the collective apathy-inducing spell of animal magnetism. David, on the other hand, had spent many hours, days, months, set apart, alone in the wilderness, tending sheep, practicing the presence of God, learning to listen to the beat of a different drummer, the still small voice of the Spirit, learning that there is no presence or power apart from God, learning that in the presence of omnipresence, even the presence of a ferocious lion or bear is not presence at all, but absence. Quote, there is no vapid fury of mortal mind expressed in bestial ferocity, and this so-called mind is self-destroyed. End quote. Science and Health, 293. So when David, aligned with God, came out of the wilderness to Israel's encampments in order to bring cornbread to his misaligned brothers, it was like the meeting of two opposing weather fronts. Yet David prevailed in spite of his brothers' chemicalized, jealous fury. Nor could the cringing collective consciousness of Israel's army drag David into the bottomless foxhole of fear and apathy that they had dug for themselves. Quote, you must realize that harmony is the only reality, and that it has no opposite. End quote. No Goliath. Carpenter, Watching Point 125. Finally, one with God is a majority.
So remember, this is how we get our moral courage. And, you know, Carol wrote a wonderful watch this week, Thursday night, which I heard, barely, I heard read very powerfully, but you speak to that era. You evil era, animal magnetism are a lie, a fake, a fraud. You have no face, no name, and no organization to operate through. You have tried to cast a cloud of darkness over this nation, this world, and you have failed, and you know it. And I know you know it. As you were soundly defeated and destroyed by David, by Jesus, by Mrs. Eddy, so are you defeated now. Truth is just as effective today and just as victorious. That's how you get your moral courage. It works.
So, Thank you.
That's right.
That's it. Okay.
Amen.
See you in church.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.